Thank you. How's everybody? So I'm very excited about my talk, but let's do introductions.
Ellie.
Isaiah.
Jeffrey.
Joe.
Sonia.
Britt.
Vilma.
Alan.
Me too. So I'm going to give a talk, and we'll see how it goes. We'll talk. Let me actually. Does everyone have a watch?
I will give you a look.
Okay. So I'm going to talk for a little bit and then have discussion. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about three things, and hopefully by the end you'll see how why these three things are related. And I want to hear from all of you about these three things and whatever it makes you think of. So the first thing is ordination as a nun, or I guess as a monk also. Second thing is marriage. And the third thing is jury duty. So I had to throw something legal in there too. So I don't know if I've said this in this group, but when I was a little girl, I think like really little, like five, I was playing with the neighbor girl or whatever we were doing, playing on the swings or in my backyard. And I just remember we were playing and talking, and then she's like, I have to go because I'm going to the doctor. And I was like, okay. And then somehow it came out that her doctor was a man. And it just like rocked my world. Like still has rocked my world. Because I was just like flabbergasted, because my mother is a doctor and my pediatrician was a woman, and the fact, like, I just couldn't get over that a doctor could be a man. And I was just like, whoa, like I couldn't even imagine it. And then I was like, your doctor is a man? She's like, yeah. And then there are man doctors. I was like, there are? I was just like, really, my mind was opened, I guess. So this happened to me again. Studying with Angie, we all know, we are lucky to have her. Been studying with her for about 7 years, and over this past summer, I had the opportunity to go to the Zen Women's Retreat that she teaches at, and that's been going on for a few years now at Empty Nest. So it's for women and by women Zen teachers, and so I thought it would be fun, you know. Went with Amy, carpooled, Donalyn, Sally, and I carpooled up there, and it was bunch of women, you know, it was cool. Women teachers, cool. Again, my mind was blown because we were having these discussions and these women were coming from all over the Bay Area. They didn't have women teachers. They didn't have access to women and women sanghas. And I was kind of like, they're men? I guess I knew they were men's and teachers, but what blew my mind was that it was a male dominated, that Zen was male dominated. And it is apparently, like most things, but, so we're really lucky there. So which brings me to our first topic, which is ordination. So I had the honor yesterday to go to a bhikkhuni ordination of Buddhist nuns. It's in the Theravadan tradition of Buddhism, which I'm going to talk a little bit about, but I don't really know a lot about it. I'm learning. There are three nuns that were ordained, and I'm honored that two of the nuns are my clients. They're from Europe, and I'm helping them with immigration. And I was invited to be special guest at this ordination. And I knew a little bit about it, but not much. And I saw Angie on Sunday, and I was telling her, I was like, oh, I'm going to this ordination, and you know about it? She's like, oh, my God. Like, everybody's talking about it. It's like the biggest thing. These, like, nuns are getting ordained, and they weren't allowed to for so long, and they wanted the same rights as the monks, and they weren't able to, and it's like this big, big deal. And I was like, really? I don't know. And so it was really cool. So I want to tell you a little about the ordination. So in Zen, we have these short and sweet, take precepts, we're kind of done. But in the Theravadan, they do everything in Pali, the language Pali, so you can't really understand them. And it's a lot of, the chanting is more like singing, and it's very quiet. And so it's kind of this like melodic singing. And there are three nuns, and each nun had to go through the ordination separately, so it was really long. And we were at Spirit Rock, and it was this beautiful meditation hall. And there was this inner circle, which you weren't allowed to go in. That was only for monastics. And the women, one by one, would come in and ask to be ordained, go through this ceremony, make sure that they were free women to be ordained. And then they were able to join in. So that some of the history is, I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I know Angie's talked about women in Buddhism. So the first nun was Buddha's aunt, who took care of him. So it was basically like his mother. And she had asked him, I think we all know this, right? That she had asked him several times to become a nun. And he was like, no, that's only for men. You can't do it. And eventually, the stories are all different what happened, right? Whether he finally allowed it or was it one of his followers that allowed it. And in the Theravada tradition, it kind of like became extinct, like nuns. So bhikkhus are the monks and bhikkhunis are the nuns. And they're, over time, you know, Buddhism's all over the world, decided that nuns could not have full ordination. They could practice, they could do like partway, they could be novices and go a certain way, but they couldn't be fully ordained. And so for about 1,000 years, they just couldn't be ordained. And there's so many women just living as nuns, but not without the full rites, I guess. And in the 90s, some groups were finally, because the bhikkhus, the monks have to allow it. If they don't allow it, then it can't happen. And that goes back to Buddha. Like if they don't give permission to the women, because everything is like that. Like you can come, but you can like, you have to sit in the back. I think Angie's told us about all these things about the discrimination against women. And so in the 90s, some groups decided to allow it. Kind of like, all right, you know, we're in the modern age now and women want to do it, that's fine. But there's a big split in the Theravadan tradition about different countries and whether it can happen. And so these nuns, at least two of them that I know, came from, they studied in England, and they were a part of a lineage that would not allow them to fully ordain. And so they came here and left their lineage and asked to be ordained, and they're going to start a training monastery here near San Francisco. So it's very cool. But it was just, it's very political, and the lineage they left wouldn't even attend. They weren't allowed to. Like a lot of the monks who were wanted to support the nuns, they couldn't. They were told they couldn't. I went, they had a meal, and then they had the ceremony, and there were a bunch of monks there. You could tell by the orange robes. They were there, but they had to leave before the ordination. They were forbidden to even enter the ordination hall. And so, that just makes me sad. but what was cool is that there were, mostly from Sri Lanka, the Sri Lankan Sangha is more open to it. And so in the part of the ceremony, half of it to become a one-sided bhikkhuni, the bhikkhunis, before, you know, your elders have to say okay by silence, and then you have to ask the bhikkhus, the monks, and then by silence they say it's okay, then you're a nun. So it was pretty cool. All right, I'm going to move on to my next topic. We'll get back to it. My next topic is marriage. So I've been to a lot of weddings. They're related. Big ceremonies, the flowers. I'm sure you all have. And I didn't really get the appeal. You know, it was cool. You know, I'm happy like for my friends and stuff. But I didn't get it. I didn't get the whole wedding thing. It just seemed, and like Hollywood makes it this thing. You could change your mind at the last minute. You can like run off. You have to like buy things and wear things and do things out of paper. Anyway, so out of crafts. So I didn't really get it. My the last Dharma talk I gave was at my brother's wedding last month. I finally got it. He asked me to do a reading, and of course, if many of you know me, I don't read. So I said, can I just give a talk? And then he's like, okay. I'm like, no worries, I'm waiting. And it turns out it was a really short ceremony, nice, like, you know, 20 minutes, and I was the first person to talk. And I don't even remember what I talked about, but I kind of gave a Dharma talk about beginner's mind and commitment and, you know, a lot of the things we talk about here. And I guess I wanted to share that I finally got it. It's this commitment that I was seeing the nuns make. It was this commitment to something, to someone, but really to yourself. I don't know what was different about it. Maybe I was just different. And just seeing two people make this commitment. And the commitment was made long ago. And maybe there wasn't one moment that it was made. It was made over time. But this was a ceremony to let people know, look, I made this commitment. Just like the nuns. I mean, there wasn't like they decided yesterday, okay, I'll figure it out when I walk up there. Am I really going to do this? I mean, they're doing it. And as long as the politics work out, they were able to do it. But it wasn't a question. There was no question. And it's like that certainty. Which brings me to jury duty. Have any of you done jury duty?
What was that?
Have any of you done jury duty? Served in a jury?
Jury duty?
Yes. In a criminal trial?
Yeah, I was going to be on a heavy, heavy murder.
Were you on it? So no. Have you?
I was thrown off. I mean, they didn't want me.
So this is what I thought would happen to me, right? I would throw myself off. Yeah, exactly. I asked to leave because I'm self-employed. Anyway, so a few weeks ago, I was called for jury duty for a criminal trial. And I was on a jury. And it was like a life-changing. I'm still recovering. Forget these other marriage ordination things. Jury duty will change your life, especially on a criminal trial. And I'll explain why. So I don't know why they wanted me. They got rid of... Jury selection was, it was a misdemeanor case, it was a short trial, but the jury selection was 3 days. And so there was like 60 people on the panel, like, to get down to the 12 jurors. And every day people are getting thrown off, throwing themselves off, freaking out. It was like a sex case, so people, we didn't know anything, we just knew like the charges, and people were like, oh my god! And so they had to go, like whatever, if anyone showed any like, anything really, any opinion or any reason that they couldn't be impartial. The question is always, can you be impartial? Can you be impartial? And I just thought I would get thrown off, but I really couldn't say no to that question that I can be impartial. That wasn't really it. It's just like, why do you want me though? Like, you can tell me all you want to be impartial, but we bring in everything to what we do. Actually, when I got picked, Alan was like, oh, it's like being on a game show. And that's exactly what it was like. You're in this box, and you're higher than everyone except for the judge, and everyone is so nice. Like, when I go to court, it's not fun, well, no matter what people think. It's not fun. People don't like you, like, no matter what. Like, definitely the other side doesn't like you. Sometimes court people, the staff doesn't like you because whatever, because of their experience with lawyers. The judge probably doesn't like you either. And maybe your client likes you, maybe. But here, like, everybody likes, like, everyone's nice to you because you're, like, the decision maker. And the court staff's nice, and the judge is super sweet, and both attorneys are just smiling. And then the judge keeps saying, you know, like, we really want to be able to talk to you, but we can't, so we'll just have to, you know, smile and wish you a good morning, but we really can't talk to you. And when it's over, we can talk to you. But so, and you sit in this box, and everyone talks to you. Like, everyone, you know, everything happens for you, and you can see for free. Like, usually I can't see. You can only see parts, you know? So you can see everything. They put the exhibits in front of you. The witness is facing towards you. The closing argument is to you. All of that. So then they send you off into this room, and there are snacks in there, and a little bathroom. It's just great. You can take a break. You're kind of locked in there, but you can take a break if you want. It was good for me. It was like a 1-day, 2-day trial. And then you have to decide this person's life beyond a reasonable doubt. No problem. And you can't do any research, which I hate doing research, but that killed me that I couldn't. You can't look on your phone. You can't do your own research about the law. You can't do your own investigation. Like, I laugh, but now I'm like, you can't do your own investigation, like go to the crime scene. But I'm like, that would have been kind of helpful because we're seeing pictures. We're not really seeing what happened. And then you have to decide this person's life, whether somebody did something based on the law, which if you really look at it, it doesn't make any sense. Like, they just give you the law. They're not giving you the extras and the explanations and cases. It's just a law. And then you have to decide whether a person did it when they're saying they didn't do it and the district attorney is saying they did. And you have to do this unanimously. How often do we do the unanimous things anymore? Beyond a reasonable doubt. And then the more you think about it, I invite you, the more you think about what a reasonable doubt is, you have doubts. And me being a Zen practitioner, just like it drove me crazy. And then I'm like trying not to be a lawyer, and I'm trying to really look at what's in front of me and look at the evidence. And then it's like, that's, you've heard this, but it's not evidence. This is evidence, this is not evidence. So you have to, in your mind, decide what's evidence and what's not evidence. And things that are objected to are not evidence. And so, I went into the, I'll be happy, I'm not going to get all the details, I'll be happy, I'm allowed to talk about it now. I'm allowed to sell my story. I'll be happy to talk to any of you about it, about the facts and all that. But I had gone in thinking it was, had made my decision thinking we'd be out in 10 minutes. Everyone thought like me, and we'd be done. And we deliberated for a long time, and it really got down to us convincing each other, just like I always imagined it would be, in changing each other's mind. And 12 people with very different backgrounds deciding interpreting what was in front of them and what happened, because we really didn't know. None of us were there. And deciding beyond a reasonable doubt whether somebody did something. So, both attorneys talked about this abiding conviction. It's coming back, people. Abiding conviction. So it's like, only convict if you have this abiding conviction beyond a reasonable doubt that this person did it. And the more you think about it, right? Like, well, maybe he didn't. Maybe this happened. Maybe that happened. And so the doubts start coming, and then you hear other people, well, this, this, and this. And you have to go really, 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 it's that same commitment, you know? Like, am I committed to whatever I'm voting? Either way, am I really there? Or am I just going along? But I think we're all vetted that none of us are going along. Or am I just looking at this on the surface? You know, and none of us did that. And it really taught me a lot about the justice system from a different way. It was like for the first time in my life where I wasn't supposed to be a lawyer, and I wanted to be a lawyer. The first time. Now being a lawyer is quite easy. So I guess those are the three things, and that's, I guess, how it all played out. But this idea of commitment and being sure about something and certainty, and where does it come from, and how do we access it, and do we all live that way? You know, we want to, but sometimes we don't. And why don't we? You know, it's kind of the more difficult way to live, isn't it? I did my ordination. So for those of you who don't know, this is like a mini robe that I sewed myself. And so I'm sewing my black robes for lay priest. And we take ordination, and it's the same thing. It's basically commitment to practicing. Good, I talked for half the time. So I guess that's what I wanted to put out there, and I've raised a lot of different things, and if you have any questions, you can talk more about the ordination or about anything else, or more about jury duty, whatever. Yeah,
all
Jeffrey.
All three things that you talked about tonight, I've had intimate connection with. And I understand so much about what you spoke. I was raised in a very testosterone, very male-dominated kind of world. And my Zen teacher was a woman. And her students were a product of her teaching. And so what many of us 30 years ago got was a lot of a discussion about women priests. And so by having that person as my teacher, I became very sensitive to the whole issue of ordination. I've really been following what you observed carefully, because it's an international discussion. You know, it's a global Buddhist discussion about the role of women in the Theravada tradition. We're 2,500 years later, we're still having this discussion. So it's that feeling of, you know, you can look at a you can look at 2,500 years like that, or you can look like right now. You know, right now, it's happening. It's this discussion that's been going on for a long time. It's very exciting. And it's wrought with all of this old cultural baggage. And a lot of it has to do for me, when I listen to it, is the whole thing with institutions and cultures and how they get into the way of some kind of spiritual feeling that we have that's independent of us being males or females. That kind of place. And because I'm very familiar with this male-dominated culture, I feel extremely blessed and grateful that I've, for my spiritual life, spent a lot of time with women that put me in touch with a different kind of energy, and is definitely informed by not feeling like first-class religious folk. Marriage, we would spend the rest of, we've got a week. My first marriage, I ran off on April Fool's Day to Reno to get married. I didn't understand commitment the way I should have. Don't start a marriage by running off on April Fool's Day. In my second marriage, it's really a recommitment every day I wake up. And very much in the same manner that you wake up and say, I want to awake today. You want to also say, I wake to be with my beloved. And recommit yourself to that. And that's a tough one. That's really tough. And I've just been through the court system recently, just 2 weeks ago. In fact, just last Tuesday I was down at family court getting a court restraining order against someone. To go into, I have a karma with court system that I don't know, it's just so weird. I cannot possibly move through the court system without feeling like when I finally get out of wherever I've been and I put my parking ticket into that thing, I cannot wait to get the heck out of there. It's been like, I don't care if it's from the time you enter the building and you're having to, you know, I got to take my belt off, you know, all of these things that you have to do. And then you get tossed around. I mean, it's real interesting in terms of your practice, because you talk about needing ballast when you go through that system. I don't care who you talk to, and especially if you talk to somebody who's got a badge. sometimes you'll meet somebody who's extremely composed and pleasant, but a lot of times you just meet very rude people. And there's just a strange energy to courts. And I'm so grateful. I've never had to spend much time in them, but when I had to get this court restraining order to protect my stepdaughter, I couldn't believe the issues, the dance that I had to do, and I was so grateful when I was finished with it all. But anyway, thank you for such an intimate discussion tonight. I really connected with all three of those things that you mentioned.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Ron?
Well, I have a story only about the jury duty. And this is an interesting story. I mean, I'm not going to go to the ordination or the marriage. I haven't been ordained. I've been married for 27 years, and it's still working out pretty much okay. But, my story is about lack of commitment and how the justice system works. I was going to be on a very high profile murder trial involving, I think his name was Jason Tsai, He was a guy, a Chinese immigrant, and he had a girlfriend, and she was awesome. But he might have met her over the internet, I don't really know. Anyway, she drowned in the swimming pool. This was very high profile. And then the district attorney was convinced that he either helped her drown or there was allegations of murder. So I was going to be on this jury. And I was really busy at work. I'd started a new project. Oh my God, it'd be bad for my job or whatever. So I, having been sort of an attorney wannabe, I kind of knew, you know, I've gotten off of many juries by playing the game. So I, incidentally, the prosecutor was Jeff Rosen, who's very good. But anyway, so I said, well, you know, and the defense attorney was a very colorful guy named J. Tony Serra, who you may have heard of. He's like a brilliant, brilliant man, whatever you think of his moral character.
Serra, you're talking about.
J. Tony Serra. The
fellow who did the Black Panthers.
Brilliant.
Like a zillion yes, I know you're talking
somebody
about.
Somebody said of J. Tony Serra, J. Tony Serra doesn't do theater. J. Tony Serra is theater. But anyway, he's kind of a hippie liar. He wears like suits he buys from Goodwill and drives a beat-up car, in trouble with IRS. But anyway, so I went into the, I looked at this guy and I thought, you know, he kind of looks guilty. But I didn't want to be on this jury. So I said, well, you know, do you think you'd be impartial? I said, well, you know, when I was a kid, I really wanted to be an attorney. I was in debate and stuff. And I really admired Clarence Darrow the most because he defended the underdogs. I thought, for sure, I'd get off. But I didn't get off right away, so they selected me. And then they said, do you think you can be impartial? I said, well, I'm not sure. So I got called in by Diane Northway, the judge, and grilled by Rosen, you know. And finally, you know, he said, are you liberal? I'm sort of liberal, you know. And but, you know, I think I could be impartial. So then I'm really sweating, you know. I said, oh my God, I'm going to have to be on this trial. I don't really want to judge my fellow man, even though I think he's guilty. And so finally he challenged me. But then he says, well, you're maybe liberal and all that. So then I was really offended because does that mean a liberal cannot be on a jury? I mean, isn't that unfair, you know, so I was kind of mad in a way, but I was relieved too. So I didn't get on the case. And then, because of the nature of the evidence and probably the brilliance of this man, this attorney, he was a really brilliant man, the guy, it was a hung jury.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, hung jury. So then he was going to, the family of the Chinese woman who died hired an attorney to do a sort of O.J. Simpson tactic where they lost the criminal and they sued for civil for damages. Mm-hmm. So it was an immigrant attorney. She's a very hard-working woman. She had come from China, worked her way through law school, got her license, and the guy, Jason Tsai, was convicted of, you know. And then he was so angry. I think he's a very power hungry person who wants to control. So he went to a parking lot, it is alleged, and gunned down this lady.
Yes.
Who had a young child, you know, so that I thought, my God. And I was talking to another lady down the street who was a deputy DA, and she said, oh, no, he's a despicable. But you know, it just shows you don't know. You're asked to judge another person and have a commitment with it. The karma of the whole thing. And then, he was tried for that, and it was another hung jury.
Do you wish you were on that jury? after all.
That's the thing.
What about you, Ron?
Maybe I should have been in a hurry.
And I want to just say, the brilliance of attorneys, like, I don't buy it. It was the brilliance.
You know, my bias is, I don't think anybody, well, it wasn't a death penalty. I don't think anybody should be. I shouldn't, you know, judge my fellow man or woman, you know. But then when, after all this happened, I kind of thought, you don't know, you know, in terms of karma, this was sort of meant.
Yeah, I just
happened, and maybe I should have been on it and helped put this guy away to save this poor woman's life. So this was a very interesting, I mean, I've done a lot of reflection on it. I don't know the answer, but it was quite an experience. Lack of commitment.
So, we have like another minute. Anybody?
I mentioned ordination and marriage and jury duty and about commitment. And I'm saying that the one aspect of that is sacrifice. I was raised Irish Catholic, and I used to see the clergy and the priests and the nuns and used to think what they gave up, other aspects of their lives when they made the commitment to be ordained. And being married, didn't run away. It was, I think, a long process ensured that I was going to be committed, planning and going to the wedding. But every day I wake up and I sometimes I'll think about what I'm giving up that I could do to indulge myself, but I'm not because I'm sacrificing because I'm committed to the marriage. And then with the jury duty, sometimes you have to sacrifice your political stance or how you feel about the government, and as part of your commitment to being part of a democracy. You're committed to being a part of democracy. You got to sacrifice some things, including some opinions, and set them aside and work within the context of the system that you're part of. And so those are the things I was thinking of when you were talking.
What did I say about sacrifice? I think that's, when we think of things as sacrifice, it's the Buddhist suffering, that we have control over that. So when we think we're sacrificing, you're going to suffer. No, I'm just saying for me, like the first 3 days, I was like, let me out of here. I don't want to do this. My life is so much more important than this guy's life, whatever he did. Like, you know, he's like taking all these people's time and me. And like, look at all I'm giving up, and I'm giving up income and like relationship with my clients and all this stuff. And look, we're spending all this money and he's not even paying anybody. He just gets all this for free. But then like somewhere in there, I just like fell into it. And I was just like, I'm supposed to be here. I'm not giving up anything. I am gaining. And I started, so I didn't start out the way I was talking. I started taking it all in. And it's like, of course, we think about that all the time. And I guess maybe I want to close with that. Like, that's what I mean about commitment. If you really get in there, you're not giving up anything. You're taking it all in from everything, from everywhere. But thank you. Thank you, everybody. The ladies don't want to say anything? It is 8 o'clock. But
if I may just add something, I'm new here. What goes with sacrifice also, there is also the element of trusting and deciding. And it's always a big thing. It's an everyday practice.
Thank you.